As we descend toward Lake Champlain, we cross many roads whose names point to the mining heritage. Switchback Road refers to the zigzagging needed to climb up or down these steep Adirondack foothills. Pump House Road once housed the pump house used to water down the minerals going into the sintering plant. These so-called wet mills used water from the Bartlett Pond Brook to keep the airborne dust of the powdered minerals to a minimum. Silicosis, an often fatal lung condition, is a real threat to miners. Archie Rosenquist knew and loved these mountains. He was a third-generation miner and a beloved local historian who loved to share his stories. Archie died in 2016, but fortunately, his memories were recorded.
If you drive from the south up here, you see the big number seven tailings pile on the horizon. You know, it's a mountain among the Adirondacks. It's a pile of crushed rock. I guess they estimate 12.5 to 13 million tons of tailings in that one pile. When the mines closed, that was sold to a company. They were going to reprocess that looking for rare earth, but it hasn't happened yet. Nothing stays the same. Things change, and they change for a reason. So it's, you see things and think about them, but they're so commonplace, you know. It's, as much as I travel around Moriah and up and down the valley here, it's just kind of second nature to know what used to be, what we used to have.
This winding road echoes Archie's memory, reminding us what used to be here. We start to descend further back in time, from the Republic Steel years of the 1940s to the reign of Witherby Sherman and Company from 1865 to 1938. The Sherman family established many of the cultural and religious buildings in Port Henry and supported several renowned racetracks. Heading down from the sintering plant toward Cheney Road, now to our left, we're nearing the former Sherman Trotting Park. George R. Sherman was a philanthropist, funding the Sherman Free Library, a bandstand, and an opera house in Port Henry. His son, George O. Sherman, in contrast, was a playboy who was fond of horse racing and women. There was much speculation and eyebrow raising about the younger George, and Marty Malone, who became the caretaker of the racetrack, has stories to tell.
Marty Malone, here, Fort Charlotte Road, Port Henry, New York. I live here now. My father came here when he was 5 years old. The fair was held here 2 years, and he went to the fair when he was five and said, "Someday, Dad, I'm going to own this." And he managed to own it, and then, of course, I inherited it. And I think I love it more than he did. Sherman Trotting Park. It's a 45-foot wide track on the inside, half mile. Then there's a 1 mile cinder track on the outside, which is a practice track. The cinders coming from the Mineville mines with the leftover cinders they made track out of for the mile. Horses were the thing of the day, and if you had the most unique, fanciest race place of all, I mean, it was the best of the best. What's here that's historical, I'll tell you how unique it really is, but you're going to have to brace your feet a little. And what happened was this gentleman, George Sherman, he owned half of the mines, and when he decided to invest his money in this racetrack, he actually had six racetracks. This is the bigger of the six. It's got a perfect look to it. You got your white picket fences, and everything is just so. He built it with two houses for the help, and then the racetrack, and a barn. And then he decided, well, how am I going to get him here? And he said, only having a large amount of money, he advertised in all the newspapers between here and San Francisco, Chicago, every big place, and said, here in Port Henry, New York, there will be a racetrack that opens on this particular day. And the kicker was, because he had money, because he had influence, it was like 1902, and if you was a woman and you wore a dress above the ankles, it was kind of naughty. So he had the idea, being quite a ladies' man that he was, He advertised in the paper, the first horses to go around my racetrack the day you come, the first day it opens. There will be a red chariot, two white horses, and two females driving the horses wearing only their hair. They said there was thousands of people here. Unbelievable the amount of people that came. By word of tale, you know, he was a real dresser, you know, spent a lot of money dressing well, wanted to look well, and he wanted his image to be his image. He usually wore a Stetson. They're nice hats. He was best known as a ladies' man. He lavished himself in women and booze. He was quite a boozer. And he wanted the best of the best, whatever. He dressed the best. He owned the best. I know that if I was back there, I think I'd kind of like to be him. He could afford anything that he thought of. Whatever he dreamed of, wanted, he had it. There was a car wash here. Your buggy was dirty by the time you came here. And if you was going to leave here and you wanted it clean, you had to do something. And he kept it right next to the road.
As we wind our way down the Pilfisher Road and head to the Cheever ore beds, we go even further back in time to before our nation's founding. Cheever iron ore was first mined in the 1700s by Philip Skeen, a supporter of the British during the American Revolution. The region was eventually commandeered by Benedict Arnold and his men during the Revolutionary War. In the 1800s, James Dalaba put Cheever on the map for its high-quality iron. After Dalaba, the ore went through several owners. Winslow Watson, our historian with a gift for description, was here in 1869. He went down in the Cheever mines with Superintendent John O. Presbury. The ore is found in a regular vein and perfectly developed from 5 to 15 feet in thickness. The vein is reached by 5 different shafts or pits, one of which descends vertically to a depth of 315 feet. 4 distinct rail tracks have been constructed which enable cars to transport the ore a distance of about 200 feet. At the shaft, the ore is tipped into iron buckets capable of holding about a ton and a half of ore. These are hoisted to the surface where, by the action of appropriate machinery, the buckets are discharged into cars which carry it by railroad along an inclined plane to the company's wharf at the lake. About 200 men are constantly employed in this mine. At the remotest extremity of one of the galleries, I noticed a single light moving and inquired the cause. It was a lantern carried by one pursuit of powder, kept in that retired spot in small quantities for immediate supply and to guard against accidents. With every precaution, frequent serious catastrophes occur in blasting through the carelessness or inadvertence of the workmen. Several years ago, the pillars of ore left to support the enormous burthen of rock and earth above a chamber previously worked yielded to the weight, and the whole mass was crushed together. The concussion is represented to have been not unlike an earthquake, rending the earth and dislocating the massive rock for acres.